Welcome back to the Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast. This week, we're joined by David Rudnitsky, founder and CEO of 3Q Digital, to talk about growth marketing during COVID-19. Great to have you on the show, David.
Thank you for having me, Evan. It's great to be here.
So, David, tell us a little bit about your background and the company you founded, 3Q Digital.
Sure. So I am, an old timer at this point. I graduated from law school in 1999, and then I moved to Silicon Valley just because I didn't want to be a lawyer and I wanted to be near some mountains. And, you know, totally no grand strategy here for my career. But it was at a time when, you know, sort of dot-coms were hiring warm bodies, basically. And I was able to get a job at a I guess you would call now a SaaS property management company. Back then, I think we called it ASP. And I was just working sort of in this generic role of strategy, and the head of marketing quit, and they had no one to run marketing, and they had a $25,000 a month retainer with a brand agency and a $25,000 a month retainer with a PR agency. So I just volunteered basically to do the marketing, and started working with these agencies, and basically started realizing that we weren't really getting a lot of ROI for our marketing. And it was at right about that time that there was a little company in Pasadena, California called GoTo that came out, which later became Overture and later became Yahoo Search Marketing and later was the genesis of Google advertising, the pay-per-click or search engine marketing advertising. So I found this little company and I was buying clicks, really targeted clicks for a penny per click. And I was just completely fascinated by this. And it just felt like it was such a better path than, you know, paying $25,000 a month for a brand agency that was unclear what the ROI was of anything they were doing. They were nice people. But but anyways, that sort of took me on this path of sort of just really trying to understand the performance side of marketing. And I worked at a variety of companies on the client side for 7 years until 2008, when it's just sort of a combination of events. Partly my wife was pregnant with our first child. I was at a company where I wasn't really 100% in agreement with the direction of the company. And I was traveling to India to manage a team once a quarter. And so it just seemed like a holy trinity of events just to do something different. So I just quit and went to a coffee shop in Pacifica, California, where I was living. And a bunch of people just kept calling me and asking me for help with their search engine marketing. And I sort of decided, well, you know, I was working on a couple startup ideas, product ideas, but at the time I just decided, well, if people are just asking me, throwing money at me to help them with their search engine marketing, maybe I should pursue that. And so I did, and founded the company, which is now 3Q Digital. And over the years since 2008, now 12 years, we've morphed the company a bit. We've offered a lot of additional services. So we offer paid social management, we offer SEO, analytics, mobile marketing, conversion rate optimization, data science, display advertising, video, creative, and so on. And so we've gotten to the point today, I'm giving you the very abbreviated version, where today we have about 350 people on the team. We have about 200 clients. We manage approximately $1.5 billion of spend for our clients primarily on Google, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And then we have offices all over the US and in a couple international locations. And here we are. So that's the short version.
Awesome. That's a really cool story. And so when you think about going back to those early days in your career, working with those agencies that it sounds like you felt from your perspective, we're getting paid well on retainer, but weren't providing a whole lot of value. Has that given you sort of a newfound appreciation and approach for how you approach these relationships and making sure that you're always kind of driving value and just the way that you're looking at bringing on and interacting with your clients?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I would say sort of two things about that. Number one is having worked through now, well, two recessions, really, 2001 and 2008, I really understand and I really learned early on that in marketing, it's important to be a profit center and not a cost center. And so I was very fortunate that I gravitated towards performance marketing back in 2000, 2001, because after 9/11, when the market got really tight, and I remember in Silicon Valley, I mean, you could drive from San Francisco to Mountain View in about 40 minutes versus, I would say, you know, January of this year, that would have been about 2 hours, something like that. So I just learned very early on how important it was to be a profit center, because the agencies we were working with that were not profit centers and that couldn't really justify why we should continue to spend dollars with them were the first thing to cut when the economy got tough. And then I think the other thing that I learned just being on the client side is when you're in a business, when you're working in marketing in a business, it's particularly true of a startup, you know, you treat every dollar like it's your money. And so if you have a day where you drive $50,000 of profit for the company, the next day you come in and your goal is to drive $51,000, and you just have to be relentless about that. And I think that that's been kind of the approach that I've brought to 3Q from day one, which is treat this like it's your own business. I mean, if you could work an extra half an hour and make yourself $1,000, would you do it? And if the answer is no, you're probably not a good fit for 3Q Digital. And, you know, not to say that we have to work crazy hours, but the point is, you know, I think one of the things I learned early on was just to be really passionate about driving, maximizing performance for myself or for clients. And that's been a part of the DNA of 3Q ever since I started the company.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think, you know, that's a great approach to take is approach your clients' businesses as if it were yours and almost a golden rule of sorts. So yeah. Before we dig into our topic for today, we always like to ask this question. What is one thing that no one listening to this podcast will know about you?
Well, you know, I'm going to assume my parents aren't going to listen to the podcast because they know everything, right? When I was in law school, I spent a semester in London and I was chosen to be an extra in a production of the opera Aida at Earl's Court in London, which is a famous arena. It seats about 40,000 people. Yeah. Chosen to be an extra with a professional production of Aida with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. And I will say that we could save this for another time. I could share the whole story, but at the last minute, I was actually fired from being an extra.
No.
It was because they had given me too complicated a role, and they decided they didn't want an extra to take that role. So I can say that I was chosen to be in professional opera, but I never actually performed.
Was a bit of you relieved that you didn't have to actually go through with it?
A little bit. I mean, essentially the role they wanted me to play was one of a trumpeter, because I was a trumpeter in high school. And so I wasn't clear if they wanted me to actually try to play the trumpet or not in the opera, which would have been a disaster. I mean, I was barely competent playing a trumpet in front of 100 people in a high school auditorium, much less 40,000 people at Earl's Court. So in some respect, I was relieved. But in other respects, I wish they just put me in some common role as like a soldier. So at least I could have been on stage in a costume and
what a neat story. I certainly haven't heard that one before. So diving into our topic for today of growth marketing during COVID-19, let's start from a high level. So let's say that I'm a growth marketing leader at a SaaS company. COVID-19 hits. My entire 2020 plans and strategy have just been turned upside down, inside out. Our big lead gen events have all been canceled. What do I do? Where do I even start?
Yeah, I mean, this is a new paradigm for everyone, really. But I guess I would say, I mean, the way that I sort of approach this is I try to sort of peel the onion one layer at a time. So the first question I would ask is, you know, what's your funding situation? I mean, before you spend a dollar more on marketing, did you just raise an $80 million round and you have enough burn rate for 3 years? Or were you in the middle of raising a round and you have a burn rate for 3 months? You know, and that's going to obviously be a huge impact on what your level of aggressiveness is going to be in this pandemic. I think the second thing, once you've sort of established that baseline, is to look at how customer behavior has changed. And I think that can mean a lot of things. I mean, that can mean our customers looking for a different product set than what they were looking for before. You know, what is their sensitivity to price and to contract terms? You know, where are they looking? What channels are they using now that they might not be using before? And then I think importantly, as you look at your backend metrics, and I know that SaaS companies love CAC, ARR, and LTV, but I would say just as an example, if you're looking at your LTV from a particular, what you're seeing coming in the door, is it changing? And if it is changing, you know, how does that impact what you're going to do with your marketing? Sort of the third and fourth steps to this is once you've figured out how customer behavior is changing, I think you need to look at what competitors are doing. And you can look at competitors both from the perspective of just literally going to their website and saying, what are they doing on their landing page? What's their offer? You know, what are their executives saying in the press? But you can also look at competitive behavior at a more macro level, which is something like, what am I seeing in terms of availability of inventory on Google or on podcast sponsorships or other areas where I would invest marketing? Am I seeing a significant change in the cost and the availability of media? Because you may find that, and most people are finding this, for example, that on Google and Facebook, the CPCs and the CPMs are down, which is potentially an opportunity. Your competitors may be overreacting to the situation, which may allow you to buy clicks at 50% less than what you were paying a month ago. Now, again, this part of this equation is, well, what happened to my LTV? And if your LTV is down 70% and the clicks are down 50%, you're not making a good decision. But if it's the flip side of that, there may be a great opportunity here. And so then I think the last thing to look at as you're looking at this situation is to put all these things together and essentially create a microeconomic analysis of your marketing today. So putting all these things together, how much money do I have in the bank? How are customers changing and how's their purchase behavior changing? What are competitors doing? What am I seeing in pricing and my ads and my marketing opportunities? Put this all together and say, well, either this is an opportunity for me to double down, or the data doesn't suggest I should be investing at all, and I'm going to pause and spend my time, you know, doing other things in the company other than investing in marketing. So I don't think there's not a specific prescription in there for what to do, but hopefully sure. It's kind of a framework for how to think about where you go next.
Yeah, exactly. And there's certainly no, you know, there's no silver bullet of, hey, this is just the end all be all what everybody can follow. But I think a lot of leaders find themselves in that boat of like, where do I even start? So I think that is a really helpful framework to start tackling this, problem and really wrapping their head around, okay, where do things sit today? Building that kind of microeconomic model that you spoke about so that they can have a clear head and the data they need to go make smart decisions and figure out how they're going to reinvest their marketing dollars, assuming that they have them at their disposal.
Exactly. I think that probably the error that a lot of people make is they make optimization decisions for their marketing based on macroeconomic changes and not microeconomic. And so I think there's a lot of people right now who are making decisions based on fear, and it's based on what they're reading in the news or that, you know, some prominent venture capitalist is posting some shock and awe webinar or PDF that says everything's going to fall apart and run for the hills. But we know, I mean, I know this from having 200 clients, that there are plenty of companies that are actually gaining market share profitably at this time. Now, I'm not saying that you should, again, I'm not saying every company should be aggressive in marketing. I think there's a lot of reasons not to be aggressive, but I think the primary point I'm trying to make is that the decision to be aggressive, not be aggressive or stay the course should be based on specific data points that you're collecting about your business and not based on general sort of herd mentality, fear of the unknown.
Right. Peel back those layers, get one level deeper so that you actually can get some actionable insights from it.
Correct.
So one of the things that you mentioned there was wrap your head around what's changing, really get a sense of what are the commonalities of the landscape that's changing for either your customers, your prospects. So once I've done that, and your white paper that you published has a lot of really great examples of just some of the common things that are changing, just to help as a bit of a cheat sheet for folks. So once I've wrapped my head around that, what are these common challenges and kind of oriented myself in this chaos, I'm still stuck with the situation where my main events that were going to be responsible for a big chunk of my leads for the year have been canceled. So I've got a huge gap in my funnel that I'm still responsible for. How should I be thinking about filling that void?
Yeah, as I said, I think first of all, the most important thing is to sort of just identify where your customers are spending their time now. So if that big lead gen conference is canceled, now you've got thousands of potential customers who are assumably doing something else other than, you know, watching the Tiger King or whatever the greatest show on Netflix is. So they're during their work hours, they're doing something. And so first of all, just figuring out what that thing is. And, you know, we've certainly seen a rise in webinars and podcasts and white papers and just people flooding the internet with content. And that may be an option. As I mentioned, I think there are going to be opportunities in media where people are just pulling back. And we've seen this with some clients who have just literally paused their media spend 100% entirely. And so you know, Google reported their earnings, and the data showed that they were slightly up for Q1 year over year. But the real test of Google's earnings is going to be in Q2. I think everyone knows that Google's earnings are going to be, revenue is going to be down anywhere from, you know, sort of 7 or 8% to upwards of 20% year over year. And that is just because a lot of companies aren't spending money on media right now, or reducing their bids. So you may be in a situation where you had $20,000 allocated to a conference, and now that $20,000 is available, and previously 2 months ago, you would be lucky to get the fourth or fifth position on Google and paid advertising for a really high intent, you know, term that would drive a lot of conversions for you. And now that same keyword may be available in first position for 75% of what you paid for in fourth position. And again, if you can do the math on all this and sort of understand your economics, the full economics of what is the anticipated LTV that I get from this customer, or ARR, or whatever you want to use, there's an opportunity here to sort of take some of that budget that you were spending on a experiential event like a conference and put it into something that could be really profitable for you. And I'll give you one example of how what happened to me many years ago, back in, again, in 2001, when I was working at a legal website. No one was spending any money after 9/11. And MSN, Microsoft, was trying to sell keywords on MSN. And I went to them and I said, listen, I'll buy the word lawyer for an entire year for 25 cents a click, as long as you guarantee me I'm in first, second, or third position. And they agreed to it. And, you know, today, if you tried to buy the word lawyer on Bing or in Google, just that word, it's going to cost you at least $10 a click, maybe more. But it was a situation where, you know, you got a salesperson who's desperate to get anything closed, and I was able to buy it for pennies in the dollar. So there are opportunities out there to find new channels. The other thing I'll say is, if you decide that, look, I got to save that $20,000, I can't spend it on other forms of paid media, there's plenty of other things you can do with your time. A lot of people are doing enhancements to their search engine optimization right now, just going through their site, cleaning it up, writing content that's going to get them ranked organically so they don't have to pay for the traffic. People are doing conversion rate optimization testing their homepage, testing their landing page, testing their messaging. There's plenty of things you can do that don't require more money. And then the last thing I'll say is, just going back to this notion of understanding where your customers are, you know, there are new queries being invented daily by customers who are looking for different types of things today than they would have been looking for 6 months ago. And so if you can sort of understand the zeitgeist of your customer behavior, and by the way, you can get some of this information by just looking at things like Google Trends, Google Search Console, which will tell you what people are actually searching for on your site or how they found you, Google Analytics. You could start to see these trends. You may be able to capitalize on a trend either through organically or through paid advertising that your competitors aren't aware of. And in that instance, if you're the first person to write a blog on whatever, you know, SaaS in the age of COVID, well, that blog's been written, but something very specific to your particular industry and how it's related to COVID, you know, that's an opportunity to get a ton of viral traffic for no money or very little money.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point. And so if the standard, you know, non-brand keywords that are typically your top of funnel go-tos, if maybe those haven't come down as much, or competitors are blasting those, so you want to get a bit more creative, really trying to get ahead of the curve, look at what are the newer trending keywords. You may be able to get those for cheaper, get that content out first, and then therefore get ranked higher and be able to monetize that.
Exactly.
Great. I think that's a really actionable, helpful tip. So thanks for that. Another one that I want to discuss is webinars. So you alluded to this previously, you know, that folks are doing more digital events and reinvesting marketing dollars that way to drive engagement throughout their funnel. I feel like when COVID first set in, webinars were all the rage. I'm hearing from everybody how they got a zillion attendees and how they've just been these huge blowout successes. Now I'm hearing, you know, webinar fatigue is setting in. How do you think about this now? Were they just a quick flash in the pan fad? Is it still alive? How should marketing leaders today be thinking about webinars, or in general, kind of longer form content right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is some fatigue. I mean, just the sheer number of free trials and subscriptions and webinars that I get every day, both from a consumer and a business perspective, does feel overwhelming. And a lot of it is incredible content. I mean, I'm seeing all these great, great speakers who normally you couldn't get, you know, as a keynote at a conference you pay for, now appearing on a webinar for free. It's amazing. So there is a lot of content out there. I guess the couple of things that I would say is, I think the best piece of advice that I've heard is, if you received an invite to a webinar, to your own webinar in your email box, would you read about the webinar and would you share it with six of your business colleagues? And if the answer is no, it's probably not content that is going to get a lot of traction. So use yourself as a litmus test. If I receive this in email, would I be excited enough about it to tell my friends, you got to listen to this webinar? That's number one. I think number two is something that I'm seeing work well is companies or that create content that is quantifiable. So as an example, from 3Q, we do have a resource page on COVID and a bunch of content we've produced. And some of the best content that we've produced is mining our own data to provide insights about where things are directionally going. So, you know, are B2B companies increasing or decreasing their spend? And how is that changing week over week? So using whatever data you have in your business and presenting that as a white paper or a webinar or whatever, but something that is clearly, you know, very specific and very actionable. I think that is a much better approach than sort of a generic webinar like, you know, COVID-19, how this will change SaaS marketing forever. I mean, that's helpful. And you may get some readership from that, but a much better piece of a webinar would be, you know, what the data shows about COVID-19 spending, you know, an analysis of $20 million of spend over the last 6 weeks. That's going to get people to pay attention. The last thing I'll say real quickly is, I think to your point about people getting sort of fatigue, people also are still interested in just gleaning information about business. And so having a webinar that has nothing to do with COVID and is just about how to use your product or an innovative way of making marketing more successful or whatever it is, can sometimes cut through all of the noise. So I don't think it's a bad thing to sort of continue to just put out good content that's just business oriented and that doesn't mention COVID at all as part of your strategy.
Yeah, I think I see a common theme here in terms of getting smart with your spend and with your messaging is, you know, when they zig, you zag. When your competitors are loading up on these keywords, try to figure out, you know, what are some cheaper ones that are going to be a bit more specific, but still get you the traction you want. Same thing on the webinar front. If COVID-19, you know, marketing and COVID in the age of COVID-19 is getting overloaded, how can you go a different direction and cut through the noise so that people are finding, you know, value and interest in what you're doing?
Yeah, I think Warren Buffett said, when my grandmother tells me it's time to buy a stock, I know it's time to sell. So, you know, I think that's probably a good adage. I mean, whatever your instinct is to do, sometimes doing the opposite is the right thing because everyone else is following that same instinct.
Yeah. One thing I want to dig a little bit deeper into, just pick your brain on, is you mentioned that you've been finding some interesting stats and insights just from looking at the own data from the client, all the clients that you work with. Do you want to share some of those? What have been the most interesting things that maybe, you know, weren't obvious that were a little bit different than the rest of the headlines that you've been reading?
Yeah, I think what I would say, what I'm seeing at a high level is we're sort of seeing business cycles that normally take 2 or 3 years play out in a matter of weeks and months. And so when people first started realizing how serious this pandemic was and how this was going to have a massive impact on the economy, and I sort of put this as, call it early March, we saw immediate declines in CPCs in SaaS as an example. And from a client perspective, we had some clients that reduced budgets, some clients outright paused. Fast forward to sort of call it end of March, when we saw the stock market particularly low and a lot of uncertainty about how soon we were going to be able to come out of this. You know, it was starting to look like a matter of, you know, quarters instead of months. And we started to see further degradations of CPCs as companies that weren't maybe directly impacted by, so, you know, not like travel companies or retail companies, just big companies started to worry about overall consumer demand and started to reduce budgets again. And then you go to sort of early April to now, and what we've seen is actually companies are starting to emerge from winter, so to speak, and some of them are starting to reinvest in marketing. There's a perception that sort of the worst is behind us. At least this is from a portion of our client base, and we're seeing this in some of the data in terms of spend, where people are now starting to anticipate that there will be some normalcy and business normalcy, perhaps in the next sort of 1 to 2 months. And so they're starting to invest again. So in aggregate, I think the data still shows that CPCs are still much cheaper than they were in January, but there's been a little bit more optimism in the last 2 weeks.
So David, the next thing I want to pick your brain on, and you've mentioned a couple, but what are some of the common mistakes that you're seeing companies make right now in the growth marketing space? I mean, these can be, you know, more strategic. These can be on the actual execution side of things. But would love to just hear your overall thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I think first of all, I think that the biggest mistake that I see time and time again is the emphasis on macro, not micro. So we talked about that a bit. You know, just this notion that, like, because the overall economy is down, or because some pundit has said that the market is going to get destroyed, that should be the main point of optimization and not the data that you're seeing in your own accounts and your own analytics. So I think that's one that is a mistake. I think the second one would be to not be looking at your data on a very regular basis, much more frequently than you might usually. So going back to what I said previously about how, you know, we're seeing an entire business cycle in 6 weeks, we are definitely encouraging our clients to be looking at their data on a daily basis and to be pivoting if necessary on a daily basis. So that can mean anything from the query identification of what's trending and acting on that, to adjusting budgets based on how LTV is changing, to messaging, to making sure that it's appropriate to the times. So regularly keeping track of things is really important. I think related to that, is really being very closely tracked to your competitors. So a mistake would be to isolate yourself and be myopic and not be concerned about what competitors are doing, because what we know is that every company should be looking at changes to their messaging at a minimum, making sure that it's crisis appropriate and in a crisis appropriate way, taking advantage of changes in behavior. There are going to be companies there are many companies that have changed their offer. A lot of companies are offering free trials in some cases as a gesture of sort of solidarity and goodwill, but also as a way to get people to try out the product at a time when there's a lot of fear of change. So related to that, there's also going to be companies that are going to be changing their pricing as well. So if you are focused on your own business and you suddenly see your conversion rates going down and your revenue going down and you just conclude that the cause of this is the macro environment, not even realizing that the reason that you're losing business is that your competitor has cut their prices in half, that's a big mistake. So, you know, it all goes back to being very data centric, being very nimble, and just taking as many inputs as you can and making decisions based on the inputs that you're seeing to push the business forward.
Got it. And then what about kind of the flip side of that? Would love to hear about what are some companies that you see what they're doing, you're like, gosh, that is, they've nailed it. You know, that's exactly the right way to be doing growth marketing right now in this current environment. I know you all, you know, you mentioned 200 plus clients that you work with, so you've got a ton of visibility just kind of across different industries. I'd love to hear about a couple examples of what best in class really looks like.
Yeah, I mean, I think two that come to mind. One would be TurboTax, which what I really admire about them is that they have a really great understanding of the connection between brand and performance marketing, and they're constantly evaluating how the two interact with each other. So, you know, they're a company that, you know, the normally at this time of year, this is their absolute craziest time. And I think it is still a relatively crazy time for them. But the filing date has been pushed back on taxes, I think, to July. And so their ability to sort of be very nimble and to see the top of the funnel all the way down to the bottom of the funnel just enables them to be really smart at pivoting and extending the time period at which they were going to spend their money and taking advantage of media opportunities that other companies might not be nimble enough to take advantage of. So that's one that I always admire. Another one that we have been really impressed by and excited to be working with is MailChimp, which is, I think, in the SaaS space. And what I think is cool about them is I think a lot of people, and I think they're working on, you know, changing this perception, but a lot of people may think of MailChimp as the, you know, email marketing company and an ESP or whatever you want to call them. And they actually have a lot more to offer than that. They really are kind of a full service marketing automation and management program. And so if you look at their website and if you look at their marketing, you can see that they have started to put a lot more emphasis on some of the tools that would be particularly relevant during a pandemic like this. So they're offering free custom domain names to help people get started. They're emphasizing their collaboration tools, their website builder, all things that are sort of low risk, easily do at home, help you grow your company during tough times. And I think they're having tremendous success as a result.
Yeah, I think those are two great examples because they're both quite different. They're companies that are at different stages. And I think just thinking back to a lot of what we've covered today, just these strategies and tactics, just being very applicable for both big and small companies, regardless of kind of where they're at in their company life cycle. Are there any other topics, David, that maybe we haven't touched on yet today that are important to this conversation?
I mean, maybe two that I would bring up. One would be that I think for every business, we're at a moment in history where how you treat your staff and how you treat your customers is going to reverberate for many, many years to come after this crisis. So certainly I've seen a lot of companies in Silicon Valley sort of announce, you know, we're not laying anyone off for 90 days. And if we do lay people off, we're going to try to furlough them and give them health benefits, obviously. And I think that's really important. I think that, you know, we've been in such a bull economy. People have sort of like maybe taken for granted that it's nice to have a job and it's nice to have an employer that cares about you. So I think this is and I think the other thing too, I'll say this from my perspective, and we've had customers call us up and say, hey, listen, I want to keep using you guys, but can I have an extra 30 days to pay my bill? And, you know, we'll, as best we can, we'll sort of make those accommodations because, you know, we want to pay it forward. We want to make sure that when we all make it through this, that people feel like we treated them fairly and they will remember that. So I think that's one point that's interesting. I think the other point is, you know, I've been in marketing now for 20 years in Silicon Valley, and I've seen the ebb and tide of marketing. And, you know, again, we've been in a bull market, and there's been, frankly, a lot of empire building and marketing teams. And because there's a lot of confidence that once you've sort of made it past the Series A crunch, you know, you can get your next $50 or $100 million round. There's been companies that have been hiring marketers like they're going to be extinct. You got to store them for the winter. And I think that's going to change. I think we're going to see a lot more scrutiny on, do I really need 50 people to manage this marketing program? I think I saw that it was Uber, I think, that laid off 400 people from their marketing department, which was only 25% of the marketing department. And I just kept thinking, like, what are these people doing? I mean, does every Uber driver get their own marketer? I mean, what's the plan here? So I just think we're going to see a lot more scrutiny. And I don't necessarily think that means that agencies are going to sort of emerge as the default choice. I think that CMOs are going to have to choose, you know, do I need this person in-house? If not, do I need them as an outsourced service solution? If not, do I need them at all? And so yeah. We're going to see a lot more efficiency. I mean, we're going from a period of where the mantra was growth, right? I mean, when we talk about ARR, as far as I know, there's no profit metric in ARR. It's just about the revenue. And I think we're going to see a lot more conversations about ROI instead of ARR, and that impacts how people make their decisions in these companies. Another thing that I often talk to customers about is the messaging in their ad text. And I've historically said that there are four emotions that will sell anything, and those are fear, greed, vanity, and exclusivity. I think it goes without saying that this is not the time to be using fear in your messaging, because it would be very tone deaf to taking advantage of people and their general unease about what's happening in our economy and health-wise. So I sort of replaced the four horsemen of emotions, the fear, greed, vanity, exclusivity, with sort of four new emotions that I think are working in the COVID environment. And those would be safety, ease, risk-free, and flexibility. So as you think about what you're messaging to consumers, whether those are business consumers or consumers, I think about how you can create ad text and landing pages and emails and webinars that are making them feel in some ways better and less stressed out, because I think that is going to resonate really well. And actually, we've seen some data that suggests that it does resonate really well at this time.
Great. Those are all really good points. And as everybody's talking about, you know, be empathetic, read your messaging, I think those are four helpful elements to really keep in mind and for teams to center around as they're thinking about how to recraft their messaging to prospects and customers. So David, you mentioned this theme of micro versus macro and the importance of kind of looking past the macro and really getting a bit more granular so that you have, you know, so that you're looking at data and can make smart decisions in the right way. We talked about how this applies to kind of CPC and looking at different keywords. Well, how else does this manifest itself?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for any business, especially a B2B business where there's a long purchase cycle or there's a recurring revenue cycle, you know, understanding how your LTV or your ARR is changing as a result of something like an economic downturn is really important and can be really impactful. So as an example, one thing that we do for some of our clients is what we call a cohort analysis, which is essentially looking at a given set of converted clients and following them over time to track what the actual LTV is and to see whether the LTV is changing. So in a time like this, you could literally be looking at cohort analysis on a weekly basis if you can sort of project things like, you know, what's the average order size, you know, the initial subscription size of a new customer that we just signed up this week. And how has that changed over what we expected it to be? And how is it changing? Mm-hmm. So you might be able to look at 4 to 6 weeks of cohort analysis and say, you know what, my LTV, you know, the initial subscription size is a little bit lower, but in aggregate, it's only 10% lower than I expected it to be. And so if you have that kind of information, you can make some really smart micro decisions, because I think one of the things people are really afraid of right now is they're afraid that customer behavior is changing significantly and negatively. And so as a result, they're reducing their budgets a lot. And again, if you know that your LTV is only down 10% in terms of your modeling and the CPCs on Google are down 40%, you've just made a 30% delta.
Yeah.
By being smarter about your data, because you have better information than your competitors do. So that's another sort of really specific micro strategy that like a SaaS company could apply and be effective with.
Yeah, I think that makes total sense, especially, you know, to your point of look past the macro of, hey, CPCs are down, let's buy more. You also take into account, okay, what are the specific keywords we're looking at? What are our competitors doing? And what is the LTV of those cohorts of customers that we're acquiring, to know if that CPC being down on a relative basis makes sense. So I think that's a really good point.
Exactly.
So David, we've covered a lot. We've talked about, from a high level, how growth marketing leaders should be approaching growth marketing today. What are the different pieces that they should be thinking through? We talked about, you know, how to make up for some of the gaps in the lead funnel because of events being canceled and some strategies and tactics around that. We've talked about webinars and how to cut through the noise and deal with some of the fatigue that's going on, as well as different ways to leverage these lower cost per clicks, but in a really smart way, getting to that micro level versus just the macro level, which you discussed. Are there any final thoughts, tips, or tricks for folks to summarize at the end here?
I mean, I would say, number one, avoid herd mentality. Secondly, strive to be a profit center and not a cost center in your marketing, and you'll make it through tough times. Third is, the person with the best data wins. So the more you can be granular and precise and accurate with your data, and the more you can capture data that other people don't have, you will have an advantage. And then I think the last thing to say is that this too shall pass. And you know, unfortunately, there are going to be companies that don't make it through this. But I think as humans, we tend to, I guess, overreact to bad times and to good times. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of great companies out there that have really valuable solutions to provide to their industries. And, you know, there's going to be another, at a minimum, 3 to 6 months of uncertainty. But then, you know, we're going to look back at this 8 years from now when, once again, people are raising $100 million rounds like they're going out of style, and we're going to have completely forgotten that there was this difficult time. So I think if you stay true to your data and you stay true to your employees and your customers and just, you know, make smart decisions and be very nimble, I think you'll make it through this fine.
Great. Well, I think that's an excellent note to end on. And as we mentioned previously, we'll certainly include the white paper that you wrote on this topic, as it's got a lot of actionable tips in there as to how folks can be approaching it. Well, David, thanks so much for your time. We really do appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks, Evan. I enjoyed it.
21st century is yesterday. You can care all you want. Everybody does, yeah, that's okay, yeah. So slide over here and give me